Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cato, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Pierce. I am the pastor of Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado Boulder and the chaplain to Eurovision 2021.
Incredible stuff. Last week we had Adrian Meyer on, and we had a biblical scholar on. Mm-hmm. We went deep into these texts. We had a serious theological conversation with a colleague.
It was good.
Just amazing stuff.
But, best part of the year.
Yeah. So this week we're going to revert to form and talk about Eurovision.
Though I would like to say, before we get all the way into our Eurovision recap episode here, that Adrian's episode of the podcast is blowing up on the internet right now. It went up a little late, but people are loving it, and it got a comment on SoundCloud. And we don't normally get comments on SoundCloud, Matt, but I'd like to read the comment that came from someone named Durham, if I may. The Vinyl Preacher, comma. The flow and lyrics are just too good, man. Submit this to me. Link is in my background picture. So.
Wow.
Rave.
Wow.
Reviews. That, Matt, made me go to the, because I was like, man, people are loving us. To the show page on Apple Podcasts, because I wanted to see if anybody had written a review lately. We are up to 10 ratings, Matt. Okay. I believe, if I'm reading it correctly, we have 8 5-stars and 1 4 and 1 3. No 2s or 1s yet. I'm sure this means somebody will go do it. And just a year ago, we got an actual comment review, Matt, from your Facebook friend, I believe, Ash Sneed. Ash Sneed.
Oh!
Yeah. Uh-huh. Newbie and I love it. Such a great way to understand liturgy and extremely relatable to our lives. 5 stars.
Wow. Okay. All right.
There you go.
Yeah. She's part of the community organizing cohort here in Southern California. So good. I'm glad it appeals to the community organizers.
So don't forget to rate and review and leave comments on SoundCloud that don't really relate to what we're doing. That'd be great.
Amazing.
Matt, this was the year. We're finally going to get to it. We're going to get to the thing that everybody comes every year to listen to on this podcast.
Just to be clear, by we mean you.
That's right. I'm really fired up to talk about this.
Good.
Matt, this was the year for the Eurovision Song Contest. I mean, I think you're going to look back 10 years from now, and you're going to say 2021 is when Eurovision exploded.
Well, they were off for a year, right?
They were just off for a year. It didn't happen. There was pent-up energy. And there was the film, I believe it's a Netflix film, starring Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams, Fire Saga. The Eurovision story, which tells the story of a strange, interesting duo of Icelandic pop singers who go on to Eurovision. I haven't seen the end, so I don't know. But people were talking about it. People were talking about it on my block. In Louisville, Colorado, we had a parade on Saturday because last year we didn't have high school graduation, so they did a parade with high school graduates, and so they liked that so much they kept doing it. And so we had a parade, so we had some neighbors over in the front yard, and it went right in front of our house. And so the main topic of conversation for adults was Eurovision. I was able to watch it, Matt. Dear listeners, just a heads up, spoilers are coming, okay? Because I invested approximately 8 to 10 hours of binge watching time in the past 5 days to watch Eurovision, because Matt, there are 2 semifinals competitions that last each approximately 2.5 to 3 hours. And you need to watch those. Some countries, I don't understand why, get a bye into the final. 7 countries, I believe it was, got a bye into the final. You can watch it for free on Peacock, Matt. You don't need to be subscribed. Just get the app free on Peacock. But I did learn that in the U.S., we have to watch it in a really unfortunate way. We have to watch it dry without commentary. Is just the songs. And I've learned that in other countries, when you watch Eurovision, they have commentators making jokes and laughing and making fun of the people throughout. And that's probably a little bit better way. But my 5-year-old and I still, during her sick days, home on the couch, enjoyed all 8 to 10 hours of some differences. This is my orientation.
Amazing.
For folks to Eurovision, mm-hmm. right? Is it's a song contest, not a singer contest. The song is what is being judged here, not the singer. So the way that, you know, on American Idol, you might get, you get all the really, like, the people who are successful in American Idol do all the vocal, like, gymnastics and stuff to prove, like, look how great of stuff I can do. That can help you, but it's not, it's about the song, Matt. It's about the song. And so the judging happens in ways that, that boggle the mind, Matt. Boggle the mind. I believe in the semifinal round, I know Caleb and, like, Rustin are listening right now, and they're correcting me in their cars. In the semifinal rounds, it was just fan voting, but the fan votes are tallied by country. So every country gets a number of votes that their fans are able to allocate to an entrant. Every country gets one entrant, right? So there's, like, it's not just sheer numbers of, like, the UK and Germany can't come in with all of their people and just outvote Latvia, because Latvia literally has the same number of votes as Germany and the United Kingdom. In the finals, though, it's half and half. Half fan votes, and then each country has their own judges. And each country is able to allocate votes from the same number of votes from their judges and from their fans. So again, even in the finals, Latvia, San Marino have the same number of votes as the United Kingdom. Wild. It's wild stuff. And nearly, you know, I did some Wikipedia reading. Most countries in Europe and Australia, for some reason, is involved, as is Israel and Azerbaijan over in Baku. They have entrants and are involved in this contest as well as your normal European countries. And they, it was fantastic, Matt. It was everything that I wanted it to be. I got some great bops. My daughter has now learned, memorized the words to a number of these things, and it's just incredible, man. Incredible. I sent you some links today.
Yeah, I noticed. The notes page is very annotated with links. No, I did see some, about 10 seconds of, what did I see? Well, you did say Ukraine was the height of art, so I figured I better check out that video, which just confused. It was just everything all at the same. It was just, they were, it was a strange car. It was like Mad Max and snow. And then I don't know what was going on. It was a lot going on.
YouTube did not have their actual performance, which is a different aesthetic, but had, like, it was so perfectly like Eastern European Eurovision pop. It was everything, right? And their performance was even better than the music video. She's wearing this huge, like, green boa, and she doesn't move, like, the entire time. And everybody else is losing their minds around her. And it's set in, like, what looks like a weirwood, like, forest from Game of Thrones. And it's in Ukrainian, right? I've since learned what the words meant. And it's actually kind of neat. It's, their entry is, the band's name is Go_A. Shum, and Shum is a traditional spring song that calls forth spring from the earth. And they did that with
what?
It.
What?
It's amazing. But I think there was some controversy. Again, spoiler, don't listen right now. I'm going to tell you who won. Italy won. And immediately thereafter, there were allegations that the Italians had done drugs in the green room.
Oh, and, no.
Yeah. Yeah, evidently that's something that gets you kicked out of Eurovision, I guess. And, you know, to be fair, that I believe it, looking at them, you know, that they've got experience in that category. However, they've been proven to be false. They that was the main controversy, though. Italy remains, they were, the allegations were disproven or brushed aside, and Italy remains champions. But there's one scandal that I would like to stir up on the podcast, because I think it's really important to me.
Okay.
I was telling a friend about it who didn't know about it, and they wanted to know, like, do even the tiny countries like San Marino have an entry? And I was like, yeah, they do. And San Marino made the finals with a really good song. I thought it was really good. One of the things that really helped their entrance was that the artist, Flo Rida, was in the performance and is on the track, Matt. And I have questions, right? I didn't know that Flo Rida was from San Marino. Okay.
dual citizenship.
I didn't know that. I haven't looked up his Wikipedia article. I meant to do that before the podcast to make fun of it. But there's no way he's from San Marino, okay? My mind would explode. And even if he is, Matt, I feel like there needs to be rules in place that if your artistic name is a geographical location that's not a part of the country you're representing, Florida, then you shouldn't be allowed to compete. I thought San Marino's placement judging was too harsh. They should have finished higher. But perhaps they were being critically judged because of the Florida controversy.
It is interesting that those are some differences from American Idol. I mean, it's so interesting to tie the art, so it's the song, not the singer. It also seems like the country is like a key thing here, like it's like the World Cup or something. So that's fascinating.
So Italy won, Matt, with over 500 votes. That's the scale, right? You needed over 500 to win. One of the countries that had a free pass to the final, that I don't understand, there was the entrant from the United Kingdom, Matt, who got to be in the finals without going through the semifinals. Would you care to wager, Matt, as to how many points the United Kingdom's entry received in the first Eurovision following Brexit?
I don't know.
Zero.
Zero.
You can't vote for your own country right now. You can't vote for your own country, and
nobody else voted for them. Everyone.
No judges
UK
anywhere
now
decided that they were in the top 10 of anybody, and no fans in any of the 30-ish countries voting decided they were worthy of a top 10 spot. Help but read a little politics into that, you know.
Incredible.
The other thing that I really loved, because there are some great songs. I'm going to put some in my playlist later, Matt. You got to check out the Lithuanian group The Roop, who are my daughter's favorite, and they are good. And they do hand dancing was a thing too. All the dances involved hand things. He had this weird like Spock. Their song is called Discotech, and it doesn't make sense. It talks about how I'm going to stay at home and dance by myself, and he's on stage dancing with a lot of people, so that doesn't make sense. But he had this, like, Spock thing where he did this thing back and forth, and he later explained it's an E and a V, Eurovision. Do you get it? And he did it in the semifinals and throughout the finals, and he did this thing behind his head one time. It's really remarkable. My daughter loves it. Again, I want to get Ukraine. I'd like to get to headline the next Coachella that happens. I do want to say, you know, before I was prepping for the show, I was talking to my wife, who, again, the vinyl spouse, was really really into the show as well, into Eurovision. And she said, well, who do you think should have won? And I want to say right now, Matt, I don't think I get to say who should have won. Because one thing this show taught me is that I know nothing about the collective European psyche and taste. Because there would be a performance, and I'd be like, that was really good, and then it doesn't do very well. And then there'd be performances like, I bet Europeans love this. Stinker, nothing, right? And then I'm like, that was trash. Yeah. And not even like good trash, like Euro trash. This is just bad, and love it. So it's not up to me. So I'm not going to say who I thought should have won. My wife would say, though, that the group from Iceland, who are fantastic and fun and do have a lovely bop, she was particularly impressed that, one, they had matching sweaters. They were unable to attend because they had COVID and had to stay in Iceland. And then they had keytars, Matt. I hate that I'm ruining this for you, but they had like semicircle keytars. And that at one point in the performance, they formed a circle and the keytars interlocked to one another and they played the keytars like while standing inside the circle of keytars. And they did weird hand motions, like hand dancing.
Wow. That sounds way more fun than American Idol.
Yeah.
This is like the dunk contest mixed in. Like,
for sure. The other thing that's really fun, Matt, were the blatant ripoffs of existing pop stars. If you'd like to listen to the uncomfortable, like, English wording of things, right? For folks for whom English is not a native language. It was really fun, the rhyming, you know. If you want to listen to a Lady Gaga ripoff, check out Cypress's entrant, El Diablo, a number a part of the song's mostly in English, but there were Spanish parts. I don't think they speak Spanish or in Cyprus because it was like taco tamale. That's how my like that was a real part of it. So there was that one. There was the Maltese Lizzo. The entrance from Malta was very clearly a Lizzo inspired, and also hand dancing. I thought she had the best hand dancing, and rhymed dummy, money, and honey in the chorus, which was fun. Yeah, and then the other one, the ripoff that I didn't know. Do you know Edith Piaf?
No.
Me either. But my friends were like, oh, the French entrant was just doing blatant Edith Piaf stuff.
Hmm.
So, France finished second. It was a good, I thought it was actually a pretty good song, but... I'm pretty anti-Switzerland is my main thing. I thought the Switzerland, it was an American Idol kind of thing, and I don't just vocal like exercises that happen to be in a song. Mm-hmm. The thing that surprised me, we had some feedback. I put it on the social media today, Matt. Caleb Craner from the Hawaii desk of the Vinyl Preacher chimed in to say that Ukraine and Go Ah were fantastic, were brilliant. He loved them. I agree.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did, Matt. Yes, he did. We got all the usual characters here. Rustin chimed in, and Rustin was under the belief that Germany was robbed. Germany's song, Matt, I want you to take a moment, you and our listeners, to think about what do you think a German entrant, a song from Germany for Eurovision might be like?
I don't know. Tell me.
I'm assuming that you said ukulele-based, right? Because that's what it was. It was a ukulele-based song about called, like, I Don't Hate. I Don't Feel Hate. I Just Feel Sorry. That was super ukulele upbeat. And it received, Matt, again, Germany, a country of millions and millions of people.
3 points.
3 points. I don't think it helped that the song, like, they had the singer with the ukulele, and then there was a person in a costume that was like a hand that alternated depending on how she like moved her arms between a peace sign and the middle finger. And I wasn't really sure if it was supposed to be doing that. It was really something.
It looks like Rustin enjoyed that part.
That's if you're looking for a Halloween costume inspiration, Eurovision's the place to look. But I loved it, Matt. I can't wait for next year. Wow. My life has been changed forever.
Amazing. Well, this is good. I'm glad that we spent some time on Eurovision.
The people want it, you know? You got to give it to them. I mean, I didn't love Italy, if I have to talk about it, right? Italy was like a rock bandish sort of thing. They sang in Italian, and evidently it's, I believe it was the title roughly translated to, like, shut up. But they had these leather, like, kind of leather overall things. And it looked like NXS. That's what I would describe them as.
Oh, NXS.
Italian version of NXS.
NXS is good. Michael Hutchins. Oh, my goodness.
But they won. Oh, wow. I was surprised by the winners.
I mean, what a conclusion. Despite... On this podcast, talking about European soccer, by we, I mean you, talk about Eurovision, European pop music. We are even of, you don't know this because it's an audio medium, but we're of European descent ourselves, and yet do not understand the European psyche.
I know. I was a little disappointed, Matt. The article came out that I wrote about the European Super League and hybrid worship, and nobody got really mad at me. So I feel like I let some people down.
Pulled some punches. You gotta drop some bombs in it next time. Just
I did receive a
maybe
compliment.
Just in a footnote.
I received a compliment that was really fun. Occasionally Matt and I write things in Living Lutheran magazine, which is the premium.
Occasionally.
Premium. What word am I looking for, Matt? Preeminent. There we go.
The premier. Preeminent.
Preeminent magazine. Of Lutherans in the United States. And the article I read in the Super League. Oh, is there another one?
I mean, I'm sure the Missouri Synod has one. I used to get it at my house growing up. So I assume it's still in print.
Probably. The editor who we submit stuff to forwarded me a response to my article that was published in a different publication this time. and some random person emailed the editor at Living Lutheran to pass along their thoughts to the article.
What?
So, internet's doing great. The internet's good.
Internet's doing great. Well, this has been your roundup of everything important happening in the world.
Tune in next year. Eurovision 2022 coming to you live from somewhere in Italy. We'll do live shows. We'll here, Matt, business plan just figured out, right? We're going to live stream your commentary so you don't have to watch in the United States. Just watch Eurovision without any commentators. Matt and I are going to take care of it. You're
Makes
welcome.
Sense.
We'll have guests like Rustin and Caleb and other people. Tyra, I'm sure, would destroy some people in some
sure.
funny ways. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
We see. We could probably get Flo Rida. I don't think he's doing anything else these days.
That could be a goal. That could be a goal. We could let Kevin Strickland go mm-hmm. and say Flo Rida is our
Flo
new.
Flo Rida.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'd love to get Flo Rida mm-hmm. on the pod.
Let's talk about the texts. What do we got?
Let's do it.
It's Matt, summertime.
It's summertime. Thanks, Will Smith.
Man, it's summertime. So we moved past Holy Trinity, which it's interesting. Like Holy Trinity Sunday, first Sunday after Pentecost. So then you always start.
You start the
kind
first,
of ordinary
the second,
with the second
first
Sunday.
One, the first second.
It's very strange. Mm-hmm. But this is the second Sunday after Pentecost. And you get a choice about your Old Testament readings. You can go complimentary or semi-continuous. We usually do the semi-continuous because oftentimes they have better stories, but not always. I don't know. Did we decide to do... I see the semi-continuous on here.
I thought that's what you wanted.
Yeah, we could do that. That'll work. But you got a choice there. And then
you can do whatever you
need
to do.
This year, you know, I got excited at first because I was like, oh, Mark, we're going to get like some consistent. We're going to like work our way through Mark. And then all of a sudden, it's like you... it's like there's a sinkhole in the ground, and you all of a sudden find yourself in John, and then you're stuck in John for a mm-hmm. while. It's just not where you want to be. You never want to be in John.
There's
you just don't
the
want to
swamps
be there.
Of
it's
bread
like,
coming later
maybe
in the
it's
summer.
Wedding at Cana or something. There's a couple stories where you might want to be okay in John, but most of the time, you just want to get out. You don't want to be there. That's my feeling.
Yeah.
Somebody, some John scholar is going to come at me, but you know.
Yeah, I think this is a year to go semi-continuous. Because of the pairing up with Mark, probably.
Yeah, Mark's always got some good stuff. So this year, the semi-continuous. Last year, year A, we get Genesis. Lots of great Genesis stories. And then you go into Exodus in the fall. It's very clean. You know, you get Genesis over the summer, mm-hmm. Exodus in the fall. It's great. Works really well. And then this year, in year B, we get kind of this royal narrative. So and we're going to see the first part of that today. It's kind of the arc of David. And so in the past, we've done David Bowie. We even got Nadia Boltz-Weber on the pod talking about David Bowie. That was fun. I don't remember. Was that 3 years ago now, I guess? Gosh, it's craziness.
Oh.
So we've done things like that. But it's a fascinating little story, including today. Sometimes with these semi-continuous, it depends on where you start, right? Mm-hmm. Like you get dropped in the middle of the story. But this is a pretty good place to start, I think.
I guess so.
You could start earlier in Samuel's narrative, but this is pretty good. This is a turning point in the history of Israel right here.
Yeah.
So here we go. 1 Samuel chapter 8. It's really easy. Verses 4 to 11, comma, parentheses 12 to 15, comma, 16 to 20, and then again parentheses 11, 14 to 15. So let's see. I don't know what they're cutting out, but
I just copy and pasted. What was it? Lectionarypage.net. So I'm sure it's
great. So all the elders of Israel gathered together and they came to Samuel at Ramah and they said to him, "You are old." Which is a great way to start a conversation.
So they
got together and planned this
begin,
first.
Right?
So here's the thing. As a community organizer, when you're going to do a research meeting, you want to meet with your team ahead of time and you want to have a plan, you know, before you go in. To meet with this powerful person, you know, mm-hmm. we have a plan. We know who's going to do what, who's going to say what, and so they. I assume this was the plan to go in and first, right out of the gate, you are old, and your sons do not follow in your ways. A point for us then. Not only are you old,
you're
but
old.
Your sons,
your
suck.
Kids are terrible, bro. Get your kids under control.
Nope, he's not even going to get them under control because they've given up on them entirely. Just a mm-hmm. point. For us, then, a king to govern us, just like the other nations have. We want to be like them. It's great. This is going to end well. But the thing displeased Samuel, shocking, when they said, give us a king to govern us. So he was cool with you are old. He was cool with your kids are terrible. But when they got to give us a king to govern us, you lost him. You lost him on that one.
I mean, like most parents, so, you know, like your kids are terrible. Right, right. I don't need you to tell me that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to Samuel, listen to the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you. It's not about you, Samuel. That's what people say to me. It's not about you. This is not about you. It's about them. For they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them, just as they have done to me from the day I brought them up out of Egypt to this day, God is pissed. Forsaking me and serving other gods, so also they are doing to you. Now then, listen to their voice. Only you shall solemnly warn them and show them the ways of the king who shall reign over them. Put the fear of God into these people, Samuel. So, Samuel did. He reported all the ways of the Lord, all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, these will be the ways of the king who will reign over you.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. He will take your sons and appoint them to his chariots and to be his horsemen and to run before his chariots. Maybe that sounds good, but front lines of battle here is what it sounds like to me. And he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and some to plow his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his implements of war and the equipment of his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive orchards and give them to his courtiers. He will take one-tenth
Samuel
of your grain.
Samuel did have a French accent.
He did. And of your vineyards and give it to his officers and his courtiers. He will take your male and female slaves and the best of your cattle and donkeys and put them to his work. He will take one-tenth of your flocks, and you shall be his slaves. And in that day, you will cry out because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves. But the Lord will not answer you in that day. I mean, that sounds pretty convincing. So,
Hear what you're saying, Samuel. We got it wrong. Let's go with a prime minister, if we could.
Nope, the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel. They said, no! Exclamation point. But we are determined to have a king over us, so that we may also be like other nations. We want to be in Eurovision. And that our king may govern us, and go out before us, and fight our battles for us. I mean, that is the benefit of having an autocrat. They're just going to do it for you. Now, you got to do whatever they want, but they'll do, you know, they'll take care of you, I guess. Maybe. Samuel said to the people, come, let us go to Gilgal and there renew the kingship. Samuel threw in the towel pretty quick. Maybe we skipped a lot here, I guess. We skipped chapter 11. So all the people went to Gilgal, and there they made Saul king before the Lord in Gilgal. And then I love this last sentence. There they sacrificed offerings of well-being before the Lord. And there, Saul and all the Israelites rejoiced greatly. Doesn't seem like Samuel and the Lord are rejoicing greatly, but no. But Saul and the Israelites rejoicing greatly. Good story.
It is a good story, Matt. It is a very good story.
This is the setup to the biblical Game of Thrones right here. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is in the spirit. Samuel is in the spirit of Univision here, or not Univision, Eurovision. one of the great things about Eurovision is that it celebrates the diversity of that place, and people do not make the assumption like American Idol does that we're all the same, right? So Lithuania's entrant is very Lithuanian, and you're not going to believe this, Matt. The Finnish one from Finland was exactly what you think Finland's entrance would be. Top 10 finisher, Finland, by the way. They did not want to participate in well, the people here seem to be wanting to create and participate in the monoculture.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Like, if we think an American Idol approach is like individualistic, is it ironic? Like, is this a theory that maybe individualism also flattens out our distinctiveness and the communitarianism that perhaps is somewhat expressed in? This is a hot take on the fly that's going to be totally wrong.
Based on your knowledge of Eurovision, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we understand the European psyche. So that's what we're going for.
Yeah.
They want to be like the other nations, and so they demand a king. Great.
Yeah, we need to have what everybody else has. I mean, that's super Girardian in that sense, right? The only thing we know to want is what other people have and need to make it for ourselves. I mean, and there's this sense in which it is very consuming thing, consumer-ish sort of... everything that's out there is the thing that we need to acquire for ourselves, which typically doesn't go well. Because, I mean, Samuel tells you what happens when you do that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, so there's the comparison to other nations. There's the desire to be like other nations. And then there's this desire for this singular champion who's going to take care of you. And this is going to be our guy. And even after Samuel tells us this is terrible, this is a terrible idea, look at all these terrible things that are going to happen. It just falls. He's like crying out into the wind. Nobody's listening. I mean, it's an amazing dynamic here. They don't even think about it. They don't even like, let's talk this through. Nope.
Oh my gosh.
But we still see this. It seems to be like this is some core struggle within humankind.
Yeah, if I had to make a complimentary gospel reading to go with this Old Testament one, I'd use that kind of strange one about the vineyard in Luke, where the vineyard owner who kind of sets up as a king here has the workers working there, and they, because there's a king set above them, decide that they want to be the king, and so they kill and destroy everything until they can become the king. And it turns out, you know, that's this just a cycle, a destructive cycle of life in which they all live and consumes all of them versus, I'm going to make some connections to the Gospel of Mark, a more open and connected society with less walls, because that's what Jesus is about to do here, to open up our understanding of what a family system is, what a kingdom, community is.
Yeah. Could we... If you had to preach just on this text, could you find good news? It doesn't seem to end in a good place. Where do you go with it? Where would you take it?
Yeah, so my good news here is a little implicit in it, but I'm going to make the assumption here that a part of the reason that God says you don't need a king is that you already have a king. That the assumption I'm making here is that God is the king of the people, is the leader of the people. And so you don't need to find one. And I'd want to be careful. I'd want to do this with some nuance, right? Because I don't want it to be, because on one hand, how acutely aware are we all of the failings of kings and political leaders, and their inability to be what we dreamed them to be, you know, as, to people who lived in Hyde Park in the late aughts, right? But you don't want to say you don't need to worry about like how we live together and making political decisions matters and is important. But ascribing to them the confusion there between God and king is the issue, I think. The kings that they're describing here are in the business of accumulating power, and God is not. God is in the business of distributing power.
And I wonder if the Lord's warning here is its own note of grace that the story itself in the warning itself, the warning is a gift, and it is always a gift to us, because we always stand at this moment,
and that God gives them what they want, which is strange.
Yeah.
Right, like God doesn't, there are plenty of times God does not do what the people want. But here God answers their prayers, gives them a king. Spoilers, it's not going to go great. You can also squeeze that good news out of it that God can work with. I'm falling into my Girardian, refrains here of a big part of what God does is come to us and say, there's another way to be. That it doesn't have to be like this. We can choose another way to live together. And that we demand over and over again, no, I'd really like a king, or, you know, I'd really like some outsiders to scapegoat to blame in order to know that I'm inside. And God's like, fine, that's a terrible way to do it, but we can do it that way too.
Yeah, that's the other way to go with it, right? Is the overall arc that we're going to see this summer, and then in all of salvation history, is that God continues to work with the people. All right, I can work with that. Here's Saul. All right, that's not going to work out. Let's try David. And then God just keeps going, and God just keeps adjusting, keeps working with us. And like you say, that doesn't mean there aren't consequences. Like, all these things that Samuel describes are some of the consequences that then the people have to live through. But God doesn't stop. God continues. God continues to adjust and to work with the people, and to, you know, God is relentless.
I just see God. I mean, I think you could do this in a way that it's just really compelling image of God living into the covenant that I will be your God and you'll be my people. Because somewhat comically, I can see God here and many times being like, I couldn't be any other people. Like, these have to be the people, because these people, I regret the promise. Like,
yeah.
But sign the contract, covenant made. So I'm stuck with you. So we're gonna have to work this thing out.
Couldn't have gone with Iceland. Oh man. All right. So now we got Mark.
Moving to the gospel. Mark, we're back to Mark. Mark is back, Matt, and we're starting in chapter 3, which may not be early enough to make it all the way through the 25 or so Sundays after Pentecost.
It's really great, though, because, you know, like a lot of folks think, it's like, Old Testament, kind of harsh, and we get a little bit of harshness, and then you get Jesus comes in with the love and peace.
New Testament guy.
Oh, man, yeah, he's
super chill.
He's a hippie.
He's a substitute teacher.
Really.
He's like, don't worry, guys. I know what you've heard
totally.
Before. And so here we find super chill Jesus, who appears to have stumbled into a Ukrainian rural rave. I do want to set a little bit of context. We're towards the back end of the third chapter of Mark. The beginning of the third chapter, I think, is important because that's when Jesus, like, the stuff hits the fan, because that's when he goes and does a healing in the temple on the Sabbath and sets things off. And once he sets things off, the crowds start to come around him. There's a whole scene that happens in between that healing and this reading where Jesus has to, like, preach and teach from a boat so that the crowds don't crush them. And then he disappears up into the mountains and appoints the 12 disciples. And then as soon as he comes back, the crowds are right back on top of him. So the crowd come together again as they go home. And then the crowds come and find them again. And the crowd came together, and it was such that Jesus and his disciples could not even eat, Matt. You live in Los Angeles, and, you know, one of the things is you don't interrupt it. Like, you can ask for the picture on the street and stuff, right? But you let people eat, okay? You don't interrupt the meal to get a photo, right? Am I right in that?
Yeah, no, you don't do that. I mean, I've certainly seen celebrities, and you play cool. You take a selfie, you know, like, with them. You don't talk to them.
You just let them eat with the family. You hit them up later, okay? The crowd here, the pops, they could not stand it. They couldn't give them any distance. They couldn't even eat. And when Jesus, this starts to get a little, they use the masculine third person pronoun over and over again, so it's a little confusing as to who they're talking about. But when Jesus' family heard about it, they went out to this crowd to restrain Jesus. For people were saying, Jesus has gone out of his mind, and the scribes who came down from Jerusalem, who already were not okay with what he did on the Sabbath, the healing, Jesus has Beelzebul, all of our favorite character in the Bible. And by the ruler of the demons, he casts out demons. And Jesus called out to them and said, spoke to them in parables. How can Satan cast out Satan? If a kingdom is divided against itself, the kingdom cannot stand. And if a house is divided against itself, that house will not be able to stand. And if Satan has risen up against himself and is divided, he cannot stand, but his end has come. But no one can enter a strong man's house and plunder his property without first tying up the strong man. Then, indeed, the house can be plundered. And that, Matt, is like a super Girardians love this, that little stretch right there. But we continue with, again, lovey-dovey Jesus. Truly, I tell you, people will be forgiven for their sins. Ugh. And whatever blasphemies they utter. Thanks, Jesus. Thanks for helping me out. But whoever blasphemies against the Holy Spirit can never have forgiveness, but is guilty of an eternal sin. Jesus,
pretty chill.
We got hot there all of a sudden. For they said he has an unclean spirit. And then Jesus actually turns the temperature up even more. His mom and his brother came to him. You know, what's more important than family? Well, turns out for Jesus, most things. And standing outside, they sent to him and called to him. And a crowd was sitting around him. And they said to Jesus, your mother and your brothers and your sisters are outside asking for you. And Jesus replied, who are my mother and my brothers? Shade. And looking at those who sat around them, he said, here are my mother and brothers. Whoever does the will of God is my brother and sister and mother. The good news of Jesus.
Be a good Mother's Day reading, I think.
Good Mother's Day reading. That's what... Oh, goodness, Matt. Where to start with this? There's some nice connection in the first section there. They're kind of three parts to the gospel reading here, even though it's not that long. But how can Satan cast out Satan if a kingdom is divided against itself? It cannot stand. And I think it's not too much of a stretch to make a connection between that verse in particular and the community that the people in Samuel envisioned for themselves, and that's the fundamental issue with having a king, is that having one who has all the power and must collect all the power in a community is a form of having the community divided against itself. And so it cannot stand.
Yeah.
Then the part that's super difficult to wrestle with here about unforgivable sins, which we normally don't think about or talk. I don't usually talk about in my preaching. I find it's difficult to proclaim good news talking about unforgivable sins. But this blasphemy is the problem, right? Whoever blasphemes against the Holy Spirit can never have forgiveness. Blasphemes is just a transliteration here, Matt. It's the Greek word transliterated into Roman letters. So it's not a translation. It is the word blasphemy. And it means, you know, you might say it's to defame. You know, honor is super, honor shame is they're in an honor shame society, so shaming someone matters a lot, and inappropriately shaming someone is perhaps the kind of original on the street meaning. The thing that I found that was helpful was I found a definition in a lexicon that said from blasphemeo, which makes it a verb. Breaks down into like sluggish reputation or fame, or like slows the reputation or fame. So it'd be that defaming thing. But it says properly refusing to acknowledge good. Shaming a thing that should be honored. And so I think it's that, like, I think that definition is helpful for me to understand that it is a confusion of the good and the bad. It's an intentional confusion of the good and the bad. And perhaps in our world, Matt, we might know something about confusing the good and bad, and that we can hear in this proclamation that it is unforgivable the seriousness of the results of what happens when misinformation is spread, and the difficulty, if it's an unforgivable sin, if it's an eternal sin, right? And I want to understand sin as brokenness, the brokenness that blaspheming, that confusing good and evil, that misinformation causes is incredibly difficult to heal and to make whole. And so that sometimes we want to hear Jesus saying, you know, this is an unforgivable sin as a warning, but it can also be, I think, just a description, right, that of the reality of, like, this is a sin that is incredibly difficult to heal, right, to literally be forgiven, not just in like the God's ledger of who's going to heaven or hell, But in terms of like actually creating wholeness, and in that way, right, I think we can connect back to that kingdom thing, right? Like that you know, historically always is an issue, and is going to be an issue in this story of the king. You must always call the king good, right? No matter, nobody ever goes up to the king and says, "You're old and your children suck." Even when you're old and your kids suck. And so that dysfunction of having to call the good bad and the bad good is a real problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a bit. Just a bit. It is a real problem. I mean, I feel like that's where, when we see this harshness from Jesus when he loses his chill, it's because there's something serious at stake. Something's really at stake here that he wants to get their attention on. And I'm struck by the... there's almost a parallel to me if I was preaching on just this passage. So there's division at the beginning. He's talking about this kingdom divided against itself. But then this last line... I mean, we hear the harshness of it. Who are my mother and brothers? But in fact, there's the seed of what God is doing in here to build a new community, to build the beloved community. I mean, this is the seeds of it right here. And ultimately, at the end of all things, his mother and brothers who come looking for him are going to be included in that, mm-hmm. that kingdom, right? But in order to build that, there is this death and resurrection moment. But it is about, I mean, when he goes, "Here are my mother and brothers," it is about repairing something that's been broken in the world. It is about forging something new that ultimately is going to include everyone. But I think that's interesting. There's this division. But then I do think, like, that last line, as harsh as it is actually about repairing some of the brokenness or beginning to plant the seeds of that.
Yeah, one of the things I always say on the podcast, hard for us to fully understand the importance of the family system. It was the only like building block in society, and Jesus disowns it right off the bat. And that is not just like you wouldn't say this because it would hurt your mom's feelings and you care about your mom because you love your mom, right? But like he is one... doing something incredibly risky for himself because he's disowning his family in that way. And so he can no longer depend upon them for support, for meals, for help, security, all of the kind of like basic things that we assume that everybody gets because of our kind of like, broken as it is, common compact for what society looks like. And that Jesus has put his family at risk as well by breaking that system open that was a very closed system. And that was, I mean, it's like the king thing, right? By having a very closed system, like everybody else, we can rely upon one another. And now they can't. But it's done. It's this very cruciform shape. It's done in the service of this much broader vision where everyone might have that, not just the people inside of your little king kingdom.
Well, in the midst of these very chill scriptures, what kind of chill music are we listening to?
Matt, I'm going to put first on the playlist is the Lady Gaga ripoff from Cyprus, Elena Tsagrinou, that's an art, right? No, Kugrino. We'll figure it out before next week. Her song is called El Diablo. My daughter, it's not her favorite song, but she has memorized the chorus, and that does concern me a little bit. The song begins, I fell in love. I gave my heart to El Diablo. I gave it up, because he tells me I'm his angel. There's a lot of angel-devil things going on in not only this song, but a lot of the songs. But, you know, they're calling Jesus the devil because they don't understand or know him. And Jesus, in a sense, you're right. If you believe the scribes who came down from the temple, the crowds, they're falling in love with El Diablo. But tonight, we're going to burn in a party. We're wild as fire that's on the loose, hotter than sriracha on our bodies.
That's not the line. What?
To taco tamale. Yeah, that's my mood. All this spicy melts my icy edges.
Incredible.
It's heaven in hell with you. That's El Diablo. It's a good one too, right? And you'll immediately be like, oh yeah, this is Lady Gaga. And next song on the playlist, Matt, I am gonna put the second place finisher. Where'd my notes go? Barbara Pravi, Serbian immigrant to France, is Voila, which is a really good song. And I looked it up, had to learn it in English, figure out what was going on. But it's this here I am, even if I'm naked and alone, here I am. I think there's this sense in which Jesus is giving himself, you know, to the crowds. The family wants him to come inside, and he says, voila. Voila, voila, voila. And then, Matt, I believe since we're doing stories of great regal and royal lineage, we're doing Prince this summer, I've heard.
That's right. That's right. We got to get ready for Minneapolis in 2022. Now's the time to start preparing.
Luther Vision 2022. We're going to need a new t-shirt,
so I feel like, you know.
That's what, hey, we're just an idea factory over here. You know, these are just free ideas we put into the universe. Molly Beckdean, I have a message for you. I know you've probably spent years planning this event that you had to postpone, this large-scale event, but what if the youth gathering were in a Eurovision format instead of one house band? No offense to you know, Tyra.
Uh-oh.
Friends we love.
Uh-oh.
What if every Synod got to send a song and it was an ELCA song contest?
That's really what churchwide assembly should be. Just, yeah. Yeah,
I agree fully with that, and I would be way more interested in everything that happens if that's what it was.
That could be every Synod assembly, Zach. It could be like every conference send a song. Yeah, and then we rise to the top, church-wide. You know,
oh, yeah.
Like you make it out of the Synod.
You did it.
You know? Can you imagine? Great.
With that, Matt, I'm going Let's Go Crazy, because they think Jesus has gone crazy here in the gospel. So Let's Go Crazy from Prince. That's what I'm listening to. How about you, Matt? What songs are you sending to the ELCA Vision?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably have more to say about Prince in the weeks and months to come. I'm a total newbie. But I did go to the record store this week, and I picked up a Prince record and a Bob Dylan record. It was very Minneapolis, very Minnesota. So I picked up Sign of the Times, which has just been reissued. So it was a reissue just in 2020. It came out in 1987. Which was the same year the Joshua Tree came out. So I'm just imagining these two albums going up against each other at the Grammys, and the outrage that must have erupted
on podcast
when you two won. Let's go to the opening track from that, Sign of the Times, which references all kinds of things happening at that time, which seems to reflect some of the madness of Samuel and even in Mark. Sign of the Times, Prince, good stuff, great album. I also am getting super into it because The Current, the NPR station in Minneapolis, has like this 10-episode podcast about Sign of the Times, which is done in partnership with Warner Records. So it's like, it's great. But there's a lot of good stuff in it.
I did.
All right, and then, yeah,
I've been getting into Towns Van Zandt lately. I've been playing a lot of Towns and listening to Towns. And there's this famous quote where Steve Earle says Towns Van Zandt is the best songwriter in the world. And I'll stand on Bob Dylan's coffee table in my cowboy boots and say that. And then somebody told Towns about that, and his response was, clearly Steve Earle has never seen Bob Dylan's security.
It's good. It's a good
You're
line.
You're not getting on the coffee table.
It's a good line. Oh, I mean, it's interesting to listen to Prince and Bob Dylan side by side, because I've always thought of Bob Dylan as like a lyricist, but putting on the greatest hits after listening to a lot of Prince, which is so full of instrumentation, you really hear like the instrumentation of the Dylan songs. It's fascinating. I'm getting a whole musical education this summer. It's gonna be fun. All right, then I got, since the Israelites, they want to be like all the other countries, I gotta go with the song from Disney's The Jungle Book. I've been watching a lot of Disney movies over this last year. I Want to Be Like You. It's so good, though. It's so, you just put it on, it's so evocative.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's a classic. There's a bunch of covers of them by Los Lobos and Fall Out Boy, but the original, I couldn't do it, because the original is just, it's so good. It's just really, it's evocative. It's so good. And then, speaking of evocative, I was like trying to find a Demon song, and then I found Gorilla's Demon Days album. And there is a song called Demon Days, but you gotta go with Feel Good Inc., which is the single, and it's just, I mean, it starts with this maniacal laughter. It's just such an incredible, it's an incredible pop song. It's just great. But just the mood of it also seems to fit the, I don't know, the storm clouds that seem to be present in both of these stories.
Love it. Love it, man. I can't wait to go to Eurovision 2022 with you.
Let's do it. It'll be real.
Real Euro.